So on a lighter note, on a much lighter note, I'm going to talk about a minister and a congressman who passed away and they went to heaven. They went to heaven, and St. Peter met him at the pearly gates, and he handed the minister a key, and he said, "We have a wonderful economy suite for you. I'm sure that you'll like it." And to the politician, he said, "And here's a key to our penthouse suite." And the minister said, "Wait, that's not fair." And he said, "You know, you ministers are a dime a dozen, but this is the first politician we've ever had." It just seemed appropriate for this time of year. So like many of you, when I open my mailbox, I get all kinds of flyers and advertisements and things that tell me what I need. And I turn on the TV and I see all of these things that tell me what I need to do and what I need to be and how I need to act and what kind of hair dye I should use and what kind of toothpaste I need and what kind of deodorant to use, for crying in the beer. And in order to be enough, you know, in order to be good enough. All of the time we are assaulted by things that tell us what we need to be good enough. Society tells us every day that we aren't worthy, doesn't it? Unless you wear this kind of perfume or you wear these kind of shoes. I remember when my kids were in school, the shoes was the big thing. You had to have the right kind of shoes or you just didn't cut it. You just didn't cut the mustard, as us old folks say. So what does that do? That drives us to spend all kinds of money, and that's the purpose, on our diet, cosmetic surgery, things that we really don't need except for us to feel like we're enough. And what I'm trying to tell you is forget it. It really isn't necessary. You are enough exactly the way you are right here and right now. You are enough. I wonder sometimes when it starts that we get that feeling that we aren't, you know? Does it start at home? Does it start when we start schools? One of our friends tells us something, but all of a sudden, we embrace the fact that we are not enough. And I guess I've been around people, and I'm sure that you have too, that reinforce that for us, don't you? Haven't you? That they tell us, or they indicate by their actions, that we are just not quite enough. And sometimes we're afraid, aren't we? We're afraid they might be right. So I have a poem I want to, not the whole poem, but it's a part of a poem that I want to share with you, and it's by a Native American poet named Joy Harjo. And she is speaking to fear. And here's what she says to fear. "I release you, I release you, I release you. I am not afraid to be angry. I am not afraid to rejoice. I am not afraid to be black. I am not afraid to be white. I am not afraid to be hungry. I am not afraid to be full. I am not afraid to be hated. I am not afraid to be loved. To be loved, to be loved, to be loved, fear. I am not afraid to be loved. Oh, you have choked me, but I gave you the leash. Oh, you have gutted me, but I gave you the knife. Oh, you have devoured me, but I laid myself across the fire, and now I take myself back. You are not my shadow any longer. I won't hold you in my hands. You cannot live in my eyes, my ears, my voice, my belly, or in my heart. My heart, my heart, my heart. But come here, fear. I am alive, and you are so afraid of dying." So isn't that a powerful, powerful statement? I gave you the leash. I gave you the knife. We turn over our power and we accept that less than positive thing that we call fear. Can you identify? I mean, I can look back and I can even identify the exact moment in my life when I first felt fear. I can relive that moment. And I think that's true for a lot of people. And growing up in our generation, it was after World War II and people were building fallout shelters, and we had exercises in school and would hide underneath the desks. And we people were building fallout shelters in case there was another atomic bomb, and there were public service announcements on what we needed to store and what we needed to have on hand. And then, moving forward to time you guys will probably remember, there was when it was going to turn to the year 2000. And the grid was going to go down, and the airplanes were going to fall out of the sky, and the computers were going to cease to function, and it was really boundless fear. But do you know there were people, and I know some, that chose not to fly on New Year's Eve because they were truly afraid from all of the stuff they'd heard that those planes were going to fall out of the sky. Now, please understand that being prepared for something like an earthquake is a good thing to do. I want you to be prepared in case something happens, other natural disasters, but not to let fear cripple us so we're afraid to go on the airplane or afraid to go outside or afraid to go across the bridge. Not to allow fear to keep us from living a full life. You know, there are people that I recall that wouldn't come out of their house. You know, they I don't know what the official term for it is, but their fear prevents them from coming out of the house and associating with other people. How limiting is that? So I understand that fear can be entirely appropriate in some settings. And there's a psychologist, Tom Rutledge, who wrote a book called Embracing Fear. And he claims that fear is an essential part of our nature. It's an alarm system. It gets our attention to push us in one direction or another out of harm's way. Fear is not necessarily pathological. It is partial intelligence, part of an ingenious guidance system to help guide us. But to understand, he says, that there is a distinction between healthy and unhealthy fear. It makes sense, doesn't it, if the car is speeding towards you to get out of the way? It makes sense if someone's chasing you with a knife to run. It makes sense if you discover a lump that you don't know where it came from to go to the doctor. That is healthy. That is clear, concise reasons, and they're pretty obvious, aren't they? We believe in a pill and a prayer here. We don't believe in ignoring it. But unhealthy fear is another story altogether, isn't it? And that is what concerns me most. Unhealthy fears that keep us from being truly ourselves. Those unhealthy fears that tell us that we are not enough. Those are the whispers that we hear that say that the world is too dangerous for us. It's the little voice inside that tells us we aren't smart enough, we aren't good enough, we aren't together enough to be whole. That is like Chicken Little and the sky is falling, isn't it? And sometimes, just sometimes, we allow that fear to overtake and paralyze us and keep us from being and becoming the truth of who we are. The best way to approach it is to face up to it and to learn to embrace it as part of who we are. Ernest Holmes tells us that practically the whole human race is hypnotized because it thinks what somebody else told them to think. Don't we? We listen to the news, we read the newspaper, we get on the computer, we see all this stuff, and people are telling us how we should be. Well, don't let them shoot on you, okay? So how do we overcome those fears? What is it that we need to do? What do we need to do to convince ourselves we are enough? Well, first, we need to find out what the fear really is, because often what we think the fear is not the real fear. And as we go deeper and we go deeper and we go deeper, we find that fear is really something else. Last week in foundations class, we did this word association thing. And I've done it many times. And it always surprises me every time I do it what some of my hidden beliefs are. It points out things to me that I had forgotten was truly a hidden belief. And don't those hidden beliefs color what happens to us every day? We don't think they do, but somewhere back in the back of your mind, when you're going to do something, you can hear mom saying, that's really a stupid thing to do. Or my mom, anyway. And often we worry. And I used to tell everybody that you get up in the morning, you sit on the edge of the bed, you worry for 5 minutes, and then you're done. Because you've accomplished everything you're going to accomplish in that 5 minutes by worrying. You don't have to worry the whole rest of the day because you're done. Worry is a misuse of our imagination. It's like praying for what you don't want. And all of us here in Science of Mind know that the answer is yes. No matter what it is that we put out there into the ethers, the answer comes back yes. So we don't want to pray for what we don't want. So the real basis of our fear lies in spiritual issues. Few people realize that the law of thought is the great reality, that thoughts produce things. When we come to understand this power of thought, we will carefully watch our thinking to see that no thought enters that we do not want to have made into a thing. Let us fill the atmosphere of our homes and places of business with streams of positive thoughts. Most of our fears are spiritual fears, and they're fears of being alone, a fear of having no purpose, fears of not being enough. And those fears often speak to the need that we have for one another, the positive reinforcement that being in community gives us, the positive reinforcement that having a friend who puts their arm around you and loves you through it when you're facing those crises and those fears is really a productive thing to do. And when we look at them in the proper way, those fears become our teachers, don't they? They really do become our teachers. And that is when we face them and we release them. And that is what faith is about, isn't it? That's where our faith moves in. That's where our faith enters. And that's when we move to love. When we can move from fear to love, we have accomplished so much. When we trust the process, when we trust the divine, we get to build bridges instead of walls. And isn't that what we want to do? We want to build bridges. We want to be fully expressing as God beings. When we remember we are never alone and that God is always with us, within and around, each and every one of us, every day, all the time, we are never alone. Ernest Holmes says in 365 Science of Mind, 365 Days of Science of Mind, all life is one life, just as every physical substance known derives from one universal energy. So there is but one life principle, which is God, in which we all live and from which infinite source our individual lives are drawn. If we're all but one life, each and every one of us, we are never, ever alone because God is with us all the time, in us, through us, around us, as us. Left something up here. Oh, here it is. Chief Seattle said that humankind has not woven the web of life. We are but one thread within it. Whatever we do to the web, we do to ourselves. All things are bound together and all things connect. So each one of us here today, each one of us on this earth today, have chosen to come into this time, to come into this place. And hopefully, each one of us have chosen to spread our wings, to be enough, and to fly, and to accomplish all the good that we can while we're on this earth. We can choose to allow ourselves to be everything that we were meant to be. We can make that choice. It's up to us, isn't it? We can remember that no matter what the appearance, that seem to be contrary to the facts as we currently see them, the truth of us is that we are whole, perfect, complete. We are enough. We are absolutely enough. And when we come to know that truth, amazing and wonderful things can happen. Amazing, amazing things. You know, we look at some of the things that, well, I had someone talk to me this morning and they said, look at that. And it was an amazing thing that happened, wasn't it? It was, we were talking last week about an opportunity and now it's presented itself positively. And that's what happens. The truth is that the world around us, the appearances in the world around us can be very confusing. Or at least they are for me. But and that the fear can keep us from engaging fully in life. We don't understand. And here's the key, folks. We don't have to. We don't really have to understand. What we have to do is embrace our wholeness. And what it takes is courage. It takes courage for each one of us to love and appreciate the truth of who we are. It takes courage for each one of us to love and appreciate others. It takes courage for us to be able to model love and tolerance amidst the appearance of violence and hatred. To model love and tolerance amidst the appearance of hatred and violence. And don't we see plenty of that, especially during election years? But, and each one of us, each person here, each one of us is enough. We are enough to make a difference. Remember when Reverend Don talked about the butterfly effect, that when the butterfly flaps its wings here, it can create a tornado on the other side of the world. That's pretty powerful. And we're a little bigger than a butterfly. Think of what we can do. You have the power within you to change what is happening in the world. Because it begins with me. You know, let there be peace on earth. Let it begin with me. And it does. What if we really started to think of everything as God, realizing that it is God expressing itself? How could there be anything at all against us? And how do we contribute? There are multitudes of ways that we can contribute to the world. And there was a wonderful YouTube video taken in a shopping mall, and there was an empty water bottle laying on the ground, and hundreds of people just walked past it, and finally one lady stopped and picked it up and threw it in the can. And out of the doorways and everywhere, people came and applauded her. You know how wonderful it was that she stopped and she made that difference. And how many of us do things that make a difference? It would be nice to be applauded. But we do it anyway, don't we? Because we're all part of the one. It's the little things that we do, all the little things that we do, that make such a huge difference in people's lives. And we come to understand that whatever we do impacts everyone. So, I don't know if I can read this. It's pretty dark, so maybe I won't. It says, nope, I can't. So, nope, I'm not going to read it to you because I didn't lighten it up enough. But what it does tell us is that everything that we do impacts our life. And so as we change our thinking from fear about the environment, about politics, about other races, about other people. When we deepen our awareness of our connection with the world, when we come to know the truth of our being, our oneness with spirit and our oneness with others, when we move from fear to love, when we move from fear to compassion and understanding, everything prospers, not just us. Everything prospers. Richard Gere, this is going to be your homework for this week, so listen carefully. Richard Gere shared a Buddhist practice he was doing for many years. He said no matter what he was doing or where he was, whoever he met, be it person, animal, plant, or insect, he would silently say to them, I wish you happiness. I wish you happiness. He said as it was important that this was the first thing he thought and that it could completely change what was going on with his interactions. I wish you happiness. So your homework for this week is to try it and see how much it changes things in your life. When you greet everything and everyone silently, I wish you happiness. I believe when you do that, you will find a kinship with all life. You will have a feeling of understanding with all life, and it will prosper you. So the affirmation, I made a few. I didn't do them all this time. I made an affirmation card that says, from this moment on, I will open my heart and mind to knowing I am prospered by a greater understanding. There is only one life, and that life is my kin. I add to that, and I am enough. I am enough. Let us pray.